cost-effective management of human capital. That's what Congress wants from the Defense Department. It used Section 955 of the 2013 Defense Authorization Bill to get it. But DOD still has a long way to go in complying. Brenda Farrell, the Director of Defense Capabilities and Management Issues at the GAO, joins me with more. Brenda, great to have you back.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So this does date back a few years, and what did you find? Is DOD dragging their feet on RIFs? Are they not reporting properly? What is the real issue? Maybe start by telling us what 955 actually required.
Well, 955 is an interesting mandate in that we often see mandates or we make recommendations for an agency to develop a plan, perhaps a strategic plan. But this isn't just about developing a plan to achieve cost efficiencies in the civilian and contractor workforces, but also to provide information showing the money actually achieved from those savings. So it's not just about a plan, it's show me the money. And there are six requirements in the statutory requirements to DOD to provide a report showing their plan to move forward and achieve these reductions over a period of time. This is not a one-shot accomplishment. These savings are to be achieved between fiscal year 2012 and 2018. And then there are status reports that are required, and that gets to what I was saying earlier, about actually demonstrating that the savings had been achieved.
And is there the expectation that the civilian, first of all, this applies just to the civilian workforce?
This applies to the civilian and the contractor workforces for DOD. So it's those two key workforces, and it does involve the military as well, because the expected reduction is based upon a number that's not less than the savings of military basic pay in percentage terms, resulting from the reductions in the military end strength over the same period. So that's 2012 to 2017. So they are to achieve a percentage of reductions in the civilian personnel as well as the contractor workforces in line with the reductions being achieved in military end strength over the same period.
In other words, they want to make sure that the so-called tooth-to-tail ratio doesn't get out of whack.
Yes, it's a way to look at how to balance the workforces, being the military, the civilian, and the contractors, during this period of continuing budget declines and uncertainty, and to try to get to that appropriate mix for DOD's workforce.
It looks as if they have achieved the numbers of reductions perhaps they're looking at. You report about 3.3% reduction in full-time equivalents, but yet the savings aren't coming. Is that what the issue is now?
Well, there are a number of issues. For those statutory requirements, DOD partially addressed three, and they did not address three. They actually have a long way to go in order to show Congress, here's what our plan is for these reductions, and here's what we've actually achieved. And part of the problem is they haven't developed a comprehensive plan. They did outline reductions, and probably what you're referring to in terms of numbers, there are numbers in the report in terms of expected reductions, but they don't outline how they're going to achieve those reductions. So what's the plan to get there? There's nothing that describes the process for either the civilians or the contractors to meet those numbers. And that's very key, because if you don't have that comprehensive plan, then how are you going to show that you did achieve what was intended? Another key piece of information that's missing is the numbers regarding the cost. Again, the savings are to be in the cost of civilians and contractors, not less than the savings in the military basic pay in percentage terms, resulting from those reductions in military end strength over the same period. DOD provides FTE numbers, and there's a big difference between numbers and FTEs and actual cost. And when we look at those numbers, sometimes we see that when you have a decline in FTEs, costs still go up. So by presenting the information on what they plan to do or what they have done with FTEs, it does not demonstrate cost savings.
In theory, they could reduce everybody's pay and reach the cost savings with the same number of FTEs. Not that they would necessarily do that, but that could be one way they could get there then, in other words.
Well, there's a number of ways that they could get there, and I think the mandate gives them flexibility to determine what is that way that they want to proceed forward with. The mandate also allows them to exclude mission-critical occupations, which they have, and they do spend a great deal of time talking about those exclusions, and it's important to note those. But by eliminating that from the workforce in terms of these cost savings, that's about 70% of the workforce that's eliminated from actually taking some reductions and result in cost savings. So there's quite a bit of flexibility that they have still in terms of deciding what is the best way to move forward to do these reductions. The other thing is, if they're not able to achieve a savings and there's a shortfall, then the requirement is to provide an explanation. So they're still not locked in to, you have to do this. There's quite a bit of, I think, of flexibility for them to make the determination of the best way forward to try to meet some cost efficiencies in these two workforces.
We're speaking with Brenda Farrell, Director of Defense Capabilities and Management Issues at the Government Accountability Office. And did anyone question or did anyone ask Congress, is it a valid assumption that as the tooth or the armed services themselves shrink, that the civilian end of DOD operations should shrink by a similar percentage, reduce a brigade by 5%? All of the logistics for that brigade don't necessarily go down by 5%.
There have been discussions and proposals along those lines. I think this particular mandate is a little bit more strategic in terms of recognizing that it's more important to make sure you have the appropriate mix rather than you're trying to make numbers equal among these various workforces. And as I said, this is quite different in terms of show me the money. It's not just about the percentage of people that would come down. It's, are there actually savings being realized from that? And Congress put also into this particular mandate, in order to make sure that savings would be realized, that this has to be done in concert with applicable total workforce management laws. And that is what makes this, again, different from some other proposals to just reduce the workforce by a certain percentage without considering these total workforce management governing policies that take into consideration mission-critical occupation, what's the appropriate mix, making sure that DOD is able to meet its mission, and there haven't been just cuts made for cuts that could leave them in a position in a few years of having to rebuild the workforce, which is what we saw back in the late 90s when they were forced, along with other federal agencies, to make reductions in their force. And everyone knows, I think, the story about acquisition was hit very, very hard, and DOD today is still trying to rebuild that workforce. So this is about the numbers, but it takes into consideration a more strategic perspective of making sure that these reductions and resulting cost savings are done in concert with applicable total workforce management laws and statutes.
So it's fair to say that Congress really did not ask for a meat axe approach, but really did ask for a strategy, as you put it, maybe the scalpel, more so than just cleavage.
Yes, as I said, that's what I think makes this particular direction to DOD different from some of the direction we saw back in the 90s.
And your recommendations to the DOD in this most recent report are fairly general, just recommends that the Secretary of Defense fully address ongoing Section 955 requirements. So it sounds like you're looking for DOD to get more strategic as opposed to just reciting numbers.
That's correct. And we do, in the recommendation, it is about fully complying, but we do list of five specific things that are missing from the report, such as having that comprehensive description of the plan of how they're going to go about achieving the savings, and demonstrating that the plan's consistent with the policies and the procedures implementing workforce management laws, as well as noting the cost of covered civilian personnel and military basic pay for the required years 2012 through 2017, and actually conducting an assessment of these costs in regards to their compliance.
And the reaction to these recommendations?
Well, the reaction was that DOD concurred, and their intention is to fully address these requirements. The report came out just a couple of days before December 25th, but we had a number of conversations with them even before our draft report went over for comment, and they acknowledged that, yes, they had not fully complied. It's right around the corner when they'll be providing their next status report. Their next status report is to accompany the 2017 budget, so that's going to come out in a few weeks, and we'll see how well they're going to do.
Brenda Farrell is Director of Defense Capabilities and Management Issues at GAO. For a link to her report and to share this interview with colleagues, go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends.